Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, testing, testing. Unalaska Historical Society meeting, October 21st, 1975, with Henry Swanson.
Here's the, I got a tablet. Fine. Oh, I did it.
No, that's an interesting picture.
I got some.
Fred or T.R. Lambert, 1934.
I want to go back to the shop.
Had a picture of England, the last journal. And somebody loaned it to Pat to sort of restore it. So I just borrowed it from the library for a while. Well, it's pretty, yeah. Get it back.
Yeah, who painted that?
T.R. Lambert. Mm. I don't know.
When, 30?
34.
Yeah, yeah. Lambert.
Lambert. I think it's from Fairbanks.
Oh,
I think
it's from
Oh, there used to be a Lambert here.
Oh, well, there was.
Mm-hmm. No.
Maybe,
he wasn't here very long, but there was a Lambert here. That's one thing.
Richard, put the coffee in this other room.
Oh, in there?
Yeah.
Do you want some coffee or tea?
No, thanks. Wasn't there Lambert here, Philemon? Lambert?
Yes.
In the 30s?
I just knew that there was somebody teaching school by that name.
Yeah, I know there was Lambert here. Uh-huh. And that's one of his paintings, I guess. Yeah, I believe he was...
Was that the Lambert or Lambert?
This? Well, the signature's hard to see.
I think
it's on the Alaska Journal thing.
I think it was somebody in Fairbanks. She got
mm-hmm.
There was somebody in the 30s.
Yeah.
Well, there's an awful lot of brave people tonight, isn't there? To come right out in this storm just like it was fun. But we're not going to waste any time tonight. We're real happy to have Henry Swanson with us. I think he knows as much and probably more about the history of Unalaska than unless it's Phil here. He and Phil can. anyway, we're going to turn the meeting over to General to ask questions of Mr. Swanson, and he's willing to answer any questions you might have about the history here.
Oh, you're just
interesting
interested in Unalaska.
Yeah, Unalaska and Aleutian Islands too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were you on the sea otter hunt in 1910 or 19
oh,
something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah, that was the last sea otter hunt.
Who arranged it?
It was. Let's see, there was two vessels out of here hunting sea otters. One was Applegate. He hunted sea otters from 1870 on, I guess. And the one I was on was a Jap vessel that was captured raiding the Pribilof Islands. There was no wind, so they couldn't escape from the all sailing vessels, you know. And they sold that auction here, and the guy that bought it decided to go on the sea otter hunt.
Did they know it was the last hunt?
Yeah, they were already going through the motion of closing it. Canada and Russia, Japan and U.S. And they did close it the following year.
What did you use to catch or shoot the other Henry?
Oh, they used guns. Of course, they had spears too, but none of them knew how to use spears. They've been trained to use guns for a couple hundred years, so they forgot all about the spears. The only one that knew how to use them spears was Bill Berikoff's father. He was along. Mm-hmm. He was an expert with the spear.
Was that the one with the long stick? That was
mm-hmm.
the long stick?
Yeah, with the long stick that you held in your hand. And that man could throw them things, in a spot that big, 50 yards away, where the rest of them, they never used them spears, and when they threw one of them, it went that way and this way, every old way.
What kind of impact did it have when they couldn't hunt sea otters anymore? I mean, then there wasn't that money coming in.
Well, it took the livelihood away from the Aleuts,
because
that's what they were depending on, you know, and they were satisfied with one sea otter, which they'd get now and then, you know, but they stopped fur seal and sea otter hunting at sea. And also on the land. That was just the Pribilofs. And the Near Bay Indians were allowed to unseal too at that time.
Near Bay?
Near Bay. But they had to use spear, and none of them knew how to use a spear. See, they'd been trained to use guns for 200 years, and then all of a sudden they told them, well, you've got to use a spear.
Are there many sea otters up here now?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of sea otters all the way to California.
They don't hunt them anymore?
No. Well, the government hunted them, let's see, for 2 years, I think, out around ADAC.
Oh, okay.
They took about 400 a year for about 2 years.
What did the people at Unalaska do after the sea otter was gone, or you couldn't hunt the sea otters?
No, there was nothing here then, except hunting.
Okay. Just, you mean like for livelihood? I mean for,
mm-hmm.
for food and...
Yeah, that's all. Of course, those days, people lived off the land mostly, you know, off of fish and seals and so forth. So they didn't need to have much money. Now they have to live out the store. That's kind of rough. And everybody had gardens then too.
Growing what, turnips?
Turnips and radishes and whatever they could. Then if they went over in a good sunny, sandy soil place, they could raise potatoes even. Mm. Nice potatoes.
Did the people here go to work in the Pribilofs or at Akitan at the whaling place?
No, not at that time.
Not at that time?
No.
When did the fox
No, the Blue Fox, that started about, I wasn't up here, I was in the Navy then, I guess, about maybe 1915 or so.
That's you were in the Navy in 1915?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's when the that's when the Blue Fox industry started. Of course, I joined them in 1920, and I stocked lots of the islands too. All the Aleutian Islands were stocked because the original blues were Atka and Attu. I don't know who put them there, but those islands had blues on already. That's where all the stock come from. And the practically every island in Aleutian Islands was stocked with blue foxes.
How many foxes do you have to put on an island to
Well, on a new island you put a couple pair, and 2 years later you could take off 100. There were, and they were worth plenty then, $100 a piece. Well, I was in that business during the 20s.
Did they have to, were there red fox on the island that they had to kill off first?
No, or? Most islands had nothing
had
on
nothing
them.
Had nothing on them.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there was a few islands with reds I guess the Russians must, there was a couple islands out west had silvers on. They must have been stocked by the Russians. There was Amli and Adak. Adak had silvers. And nice ones too. And there was four of us had Adak. I stocked Adak with blues. In 21, I think. 1921. We got islands, big or small, for $25 a year.
From the federal government?
Yeah, leased. Any island.
How long would you trap then, or what was involved in the trapping process?
Well, December and January. And the foxes got their own food off the island. And some of those islands that were full of birds, the foxes did very good for several years, and then they kind of died out. Well, I trapped during the 20s and 30s. Of course, during the 30s, the price of blues went down half. So you could still make a living at it, but during the 20s, you made money, you know, a little extra, spending money.
Did you sell them to the AC company here?
No, we used to, most of shipped them to Seattle for exchange or to London. London was the market, best market. And they were used in Germany mostly, the blue foxes. So when in World War II, the price went down to nothing. You couldn't even give them away. So everybody quit. Two months.
I've been interested in this Alexei Yachmanov.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was, what, chief for 40 years, something like that?
Well, I guess he was a long time.
Yeah. But what kind of authority did he have in the community, or what was his role? I mean, he was a chief, but what did he do?
Well, he was he was the boss here, nonetheless, and even the people that came here, you know, would go and ask him if it was okay to do this and that. Yeah, he was a real chief. That is, he was recognized as the chief.
When was this?
Well, I don't know, he was chief when I was a little kid, and he had lots of authority.
Was he the last chief then, Henry, was, or have they had, and how did they, where that is, oh.
Well, I guess.
Right?
Did I guess
pass from father to son down? That's
no,
what
no, they.
Was he chosen?
I think he was really the last. They had chiefs after that were elected.
Oh, I see.
But you know, they had no authority at all. He really was the boss man here.
Mm-hmm, when he was there.
Yeah. Well, Adak is 400 miles by boat, or maybe a little over. Well, it used to take me about 4 days to run to Adak, or 3 days.
When did you quit using the sail?
Well, we were still using sails in the 20s. Because we put small engine in the boats, you know, to help.
Mm-hmm. Was that your own boat, or remember some that were named after places and that were owned by different villages?
Yeah, the Umnak natives had they had their own boat, the one that got wrecked. 13, I think 13 of them died that time.
Were you ever in a shipwreck, Henry?
Oh yeah, sure. Two or three. But good shipwrecks in a nice place. Where,
sounds like they were planned.
Huh?
Sounds like they were
planned. No, in a bay. In the bay, you know, it wasn't out in the sea.
But still rough.
Mm-hmm.
You had a boat, the Kashika Native?
No, Kanaga Native.
Kanaga Native.
Yeah.
And you
and
used
Alaska Four.
And Alaska Four.
Yeah, the Alaska Four is still operating southeastern.
Hmm.
About 50 years old, I guess. So, no, let's see, the Alaska Four would be, putting near 60 years old now. They're using her, well, last I heard a couple of years ago, they were using her for a tugboat, put powerful engine in, towing logs.
Hmm. Did you bring people from, like, Umnak or Kashika on Alaska?
Oh, yeah.
And carry people back and forth?
Mm-hmm.
I suppose you did.
Mm-hmm. And take trappers to Fox Island and so forth. That was quite a business, Archie, about a... of course, there was other boats, did it too? The AC Company had a boat that hauled them, and Bowman, that Big Fox rancher.
Did you do that for a fee? Were you paid?
No, I used to do it for free.
I'm sorry, God.
Because I was going that way anyhow. But they charged $150 to land trappers on the island, $150 to pick them up.
Who paid that, the trappers?
No, the owner of the island.
Oh.
Whoever owned the island.
You mean you just take a trapper out and leave him on an island for
mm-hmm.
the winter?
Yeah.
Did you ever do that?
Oh, yeah.
Which
and
island would you go on?
Oh, lots of islands, all the way from here to that, too.
Dropping people off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you ever spend the winter on an island, trapping people
off? Oh, yeah, I spent lots of winters. I used to trap my own island.
Which was, which island?
Little Tanigan. And that was, well, I had my own boat, you know, and I'd go in Adak in the lagoon there. It used to be a nice big lagoon there where they got the airfield now. That's how they had built the first airfield in Adak. They laid this... when they landed in Adak, they built the airfield in 2 days with this steel mat right in this lagoon. Then they plugged off the entrance, they dammed it up, put the gate there so the tide couldn't come in. And low tide, they'd open the gate and let the water run out from the creek. Of course, later on they filled in, and they built the airfield there in a hurry when they landed there. Well, I was with them, with the Army for 3 years during the war.
Acting as a...
I was outpost tender.
Hmm.
I tended to all the outposts.
Hmm.
Here in Adak, Kiska. Of course, Kiska didn't have much outposts. They didn't need them.
You were here at the bombing?
Hmm?
Were you here at Unalaska at the bombing?
Mm-hmm. I was running the outpost tender. And they, I left here an hour before the Japs come in. The first day in the morning, I left 5 o'clock in the morning, they came in on 6 o'clock. And I went on to my cushion to see. We were on the alert for 2 weeks then. Well, they knew the Japs were coming, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, they captured the Japanese code book, so they knew everything that they were doing. That was same time the Battle of Midway. See, that's how we won the battle, because we knew they were coming. Yeah, we were on the alert here for 2 weeks before they came. We didn't know exactly when they were coming, but they were on the alert, waiting for them.
And you'd gone to Lakusha.
Mm-hmm. There was, there was 15 fish boats over there. I was to go there and either burn them or bring them in or something, so the Japs wouldn't use them. You know, they could use them for landing craft. Well, I got in Lakusha. There was 14 destroyers anchored in there that were waiting to locate the Japs.
Mm.
They didn't locate them, but they were waiting there. for the reason they couldn't locate them was they had nothing but these TBYs here. They were awful slow, and whenever the TBY got close to where the Japs were, carriers and the cruisers, transports that they had, they'd get shot down before they could report. Yeah, they lost about half of their TBYs here that way.
Did you travel back and forth by boat, did you, Henry, when you were doing that? Did you fly or did you...
No, I was running a boat. Yeah, outpost tender, building outposts and servicing them.
How did they build some of those places, like in Lacushan Bay? There are these big cement bunkers right on the edge of the cliffs.
Well, that must have been built after I went to ADAC. See, the only outpost when I was there was... at the village, they had one, small one. Then at the Portage.
At Portage?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
That's it, in Macushan.
Macushan, yeah.
Well, this concrete bunkers, where were they at?
On Beaver Inlet.
Inlet.
Yeah, Beaver Inlet, over by...
Yeah. That's...
In between Agamjik and Yugadaga Bay, there's that little bay with a lake in it.
Yeah.
And there's a bunker up there.
Yeah. I landed that party there to build the place. And it was... they built right up on the point there. And they put railroad track up.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I took all the material there for them to build.
There's a big wench or something up on the top there.
Well, they haul their stuff up on this on this track, and they had searchlights there, searchlight position. Then they had Beaver Inlet all gridded off, you know, for artillery. From here, from Ballyhoo and Summer Bay and Eider Point, right over the mountain. And one of the targets they used, you know where Eagle Rock is? You see that big...
on the side of it?
Yeah, on the foot of it, where it...
By the water.
Yeah, that was blown out. You know, they used that for a target. From Ballyhoo or Eider Point or...
As an outpost tender, did you have any close calls with the Japanese?
Well, I had seven of them dive on me when they bombed here. But they changed their mind, you know, when they were supposed to start in shooting, they circled around and went around, then they took off, they were going home. They were probably short ammunition. Right out just the other side of Eider Point. I was coming in with them 15 boats.
They brought them back.
And they were, I was towing them, and they come around the point, they were going home. I don't know why they went through the motion of attacking, but they didn't. They were coming out in the V formation around the point. There's seven of them, and when they saw this boat coming, they lined up in one behind the other. You know, going to wipe us out.
Did you have anything to shoot back with?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, we had four machine guns and a 3-inch gun on the stern. Only thing, the 3-inch gun was covered with two boats over the top. We carried two of them on deck. It was no good anyhow. It was a World War I 3-inch gun, but a real old thing.
Can we go back to the time when you were in the Navy? How did you happen to join the Navy?
Oh, I just joined, young fella, you know, thought it would be nice to...
That was during World War I, or was it just...
No, before, 1915. Well, the World War I was on in Europe,
mm-hmm.
but we weren't in it till 1917. So I was an old-timer in the Navy when we got in World War I.
Where did you serve in the Navy then?
Hmm?
Where were you serving in the Navy?
Oh, I served in Atlantic, over in Europe,
hmm.
and then down Panama.
Hmm.
West Coast. Hmm?
Did you have any trouble where people would ask you where you were from? You know, like the guys in the Navy ask you where you're from?
No. Nobody ever asked me where I was from. No. Not that I know of. Well, when I first went to Navy, there was a lot of Texans coming into Navy. And that was, they had a naval training station on that Goat Island, or Yerba Buena Island, or where the Bay Bridge goes,
yes.
across.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a naval training station was. And there was so many Texans coming there, you know, so the greeting you got when you arrived on the island was, "You all from Dallas?" That's the first thing they ask you.
Were you here when the city formed, when they incorporated?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why did they incorporate?
Well, I don't know. There was a rumor that I wasn't exactly here. I was out.
Mm-hmm.
I was up here.
Yeah,
I was out, let's see, 42, I think I was, oh yeah, I was here. I was doing outpost tending here. And I don't know why they incorporate, but they went first class.
Yeah.
And one of the deals was that there was a rumor that the government was going to take over this town and make an airfield here, you know, right up the valley.
Hmm.
And so there was Jack Martin, he was commissioner here, you heard of him, I guess. I think he was the one promoted that. And he also took a lot of leases on different lots in town here. You know, the idea, I think, was that if the town was incorporated and was a city of the first class, the government would have to buy this land. So I believe that was the idea. For 3 years, here was city of the first class with 12 citizens. Yes, but everybody was evacuated except a few businessmen.
Sure.
And they just had enough people to form a city council. That's all. But couldn't they went third class or something like that? But they went first class.
And after the war, then everybody came back.
Oh, yeah.
And they, they started having city councils then? Or?
Yeah. There was a lot of people did not come back. That is, Unalaska people.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. They settled down somewhere.
Huh.
And they dumped all the village people here.
From?
Burka, McCushion, Kashiga.
But some of them went back, like to Kashiga. A couple people went back to Kashiga.
Yeah, just two.
Just two.
Yeah.
Didn't they want to go back? Or?
Well, the Burka people wanted to go back. They went over there. I went with them one time. They you know, looked the country over and found out that the fish was all gone and stuff like that. So they, see, that was part of, that was the main living, was fish.
Why were they gone?
Hmm?
Why were the fish gone?
I don't know. They, no, they disappeared during the war. The salmon disappeared all over the around in this area. There was and also the codfish, because the codfish were disappearing already. The crabs were taken over about that time. King crab. As the king crab increased, the codfish got less till there wasn't any. Then it'll go the other way around sometime. See, the king crab were here all the time, but they could not increase because the codfish ate all the young ones.
Did the natives utilize the crab at all?
No, not those days. Well, they wouldn't, you know, they weren't plentiful. See, when they started to get plentiful, I think in 38 or somewhere in there. 38, no, the king. Yeah, there were millions of them shed their shells right in the bay here. About big as a silver dollar. And that's what the codfish were eating. The next year they came again and they were, maybe that big. Second year and third year about that big, and fourth year about that big, and well, your fourth year you could cook them and eat them with a toothpick. That is, they were, had little meat in them. But that's when they started to increase.
Mr. Swanson, at the time of the war, I believe there was a Pete Olson in the village in the Christian, is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
He had sheep, is that correct? Would you give us a little rundown on the history of the ranching? When did, was it long before the war, or when did sheep make its debut in the island?
See, he was, he had a little store there and lived there. Well, he started on the island up the bay called Peter Island. That's where he had foxes on there. And he had a little store there too. And then, well, about the second or third winter he was there, the bay froze over and all his foxes walked off the island. So he had no more foxes. then he moved into the village.
Is it Harris you're speaking?
Hmm?
Is it Harris?
No, Pete Olson.
Oh.
The king of McCushion.
The king of McCushion?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what they called him. He was kind of a big, fat Norwegian. He was awful mean. And they claim that he killed some of the Makushan people, which I believe he did.
Was he the first one to bring sheep into the island?
Oh, no. No, the sheep, I think about 1918, the sheep outfit started at Umnek or at Nikolsky and Chernovsky. It was a big outfit. They even had the mail contract from here to Seward, the mail boat.
The sheep company did?
Yeah. And, the boat salesman in Seattle took advantage of these sheep herders and sold them all kind of boats, you know. They were good boats, but not suitable for a mail boat. One of their mail boats was a yacht, sailing yacht. And Eloise, we used to call it the heel house. A nice sailing vessel. That thing could go 14, 15 knots under sail, but it could only carry mail. There was no room for passengers. Then they had another one called the Bergen. That was a little freighter out of Puget Sound. Had steam engine in. And the boat salesman, whoever sold it to him, told him how good it was to have this nice steamboat and to carry the mail. And it was an oil burner. And they told him to convert it to a coal burner. And all they had to do when they got to Alaska was shovel coal on board off the beach. Didn't have to buy it. And so they did. And the result was that the boat only went 4 miles an hour. And it did go 10 with the oil burner. I fired on the thing. Yeah. And when I got to 1919, I got discharged from the Navy and arrived in Seattle with no money, so I had to get a job right quick. And, so I did. I got a job washing dishes on a passenger boat going to Alaska. I worked from 4 o'clock in the morning till 9 at night. So I quit that boat 3 weeks later in Kodiak, and I took a job on this this Bergen, the mail boat, the sheep herder's boat. And the whole crew had quit because they didn't like the thing. So I took a job as fireman on it. Boy, that was some job. I had to work like mad, shoveling coal and cleaning that fire to get 4 miles an hour out there. Oh yeah, and there was a couple of Filipinos with me in the black gang, and the boat would stop when they got on watch. Yeah.
How often did they make a mail run?
It's supposed to be once a month. I think that Bergen only lasted 2 or 3 trips. That is, didn't get wrecked, they just had to take it off the run. No, it was for anybody that needed coal.
Oh, AC Company owned the coal yard.
Oh, yeah. Well, they had another one over in Dutch. They had two coal yards. That was for ships. But then everybody in town burned coal. Some of them burned it free. They would go over the fence at night and get free coal. But they did have a big coal pile down here. I think they had 4,000 or 5,000 tons in that coal pile.
Where did they get that coal?
Well, they got it from anywhere they could. They got several times they got it from Australia.
Oh.
There'd be a sailing ship looking for cargo, and they'd get the cargo and brought coal to Alaska from Australia. But most of the time, I think they got it from Nanaimo, British Columbia.
Mm-hmm. Was there coaling on part there of the chain? There was some coaling on part of the chain, wasn't there? Or
you mean
digging coal? Or
well, they used to have a coal mine down on Unga Island.
Unga, okay.
I think the gold mine there, that was there's in Coal Bay on the west end of Unga Island, and they had the mine way up in the mountain. There's a lot of coal down the beach, but that was not good coal, but there was good coal further up. And then on the other side, there must have been a lot of forest there, a petrified forest on the other side, or just over the mountain from this coal mine. That's where the petrified wood.
Do you think Unalaska's headed towards some kind of prosperity, or do you think Unalaska's headed towards some kind of prosperity, or you know, a lot of canneries now? Do you think they'll stay, or?
Well, I don't know. See, there was, the only time that Unalaska really was poor, you know, and had nothing was right after the war.
After the Second World War?
Mm-hmm. See, the rest of the time there was always something here. See, like during the 20s, there was fox ranching, which was very good. In fact, Atka, let's see, in about 29, around the latter part of the 20s, Atka was the richest village in the U.S. That is, they had Amchitka Island, and they took 1,000 pelts off Amchitka every year, and they sold for $100 a piece, and they divided this money between everybody, the babies and all. I know there was one old fellow there, I think you know him, Nick Prokopiev. Yeah, he's kind of an elderly man, and he had a big family. He had wife and I think 11 kids. Anyhow, he got they got $1,000 a piece. So he had $12,000 all in one lump that year.
So here in Alaska.
Well, they were so wealthy that when their little engine in their power boat didn't go, they just unbolted it, threw it on the beach, and went up the store and got a new one.
Here in Unalaska, then after the war, it was a low point economically.
Oh yeah, very low.
Mm-hmm. And that started to improve when about?
Well, I don't think, I don't think it was much till the crab started. Mm. See, during the 30s, there was a herring fishery here.
Cod fishing too, wasn't there?
Yeah, but then that didn't amount to anything. You know, the cod fishing. It helped.
Did you get it on a herring fishing?
No. No, that was, those herring appeared here all of a sudden, about 28 or 29, I think. And they were so thick, and they were big herring, not the ones, these little local herring you get now. They were big, they were almost big as a humpy salmon. And they come so thick that they plugged the channel down here. Going through the channel, they come in the bay here and going through the channel here. There were schools 50 miles long. I run through from here to McCushion, just solid herring at that time.
How many years did that last?
It lasted all through the 30s, but toward the end there it got they kind of slacked off. And then after the war, 45, let's see, there was, during the war, of course, they didn't pack any herring. And 45, right after the war, Vern Robinson and Jim Manson packed a few, but they only could get about 400 barrels. In 1930, they put up 40,000 barrels, 42,000 barrels here. That's some big barrels, that's high. Besides the bloaters, that's the herring that's salted whole, you know, without being cleaned. They call them bloaters. Hundreds of tons of that went out.
Hmm. Were most of the herring fishermen local people, or did they come
no,
up?
They, no, they, purse seiners came here. Hmm. And just caught them right in the bay. They didn't even have to hunt for them. They just set the seine any old where, and the herring was that thick.
When was the first airplane here on Alaska?
Well, I think that round the world flight was one of the first.
Hmm. In the 20s?
Yeah, that's early 20s, when them five planes, army planes, I think, one of them crashed up by Fort Muller. Major Martin is the one that crashed or made the fourth landing. And he claimed he ran into a mountain. Well, there was a party went up to the wreck and he was out in the flat. So put a big pile of rocks there and with a sign on Major Martin's Mountain. But he did have made a forced landing, roped on or something. But let's see. I think. Of course, those planes just went through here. Mm-hmm. And later on, that was in the 20s too, there was a German plane going around the world. Mm. See, these army planes were float planes, you know, with no hull just floats, you know, two floats. Then there was a German going around the world. He had his was a boat job, you know, not floats, just a hull. And he had one engine on top with two propellers, one in front and one behind, all off the same engine. Then about 1930, the Coast Guard had a little plane here, a little float plane. That's when they built that little hangar down there, you know, the one they use for warehouse now, that tin house. On just the other side of RCA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was built about 1930.
Hmm. When did they build that big brick building over on Dutch?
Was that about 30.
About the same time.
Mm-hmm. That replaced, that was when the naval radio station, they put them steel towers in. And tore down the wooden buildings they had there and built that brick one.
Do you know the man they called Columbus?
Oh, yeah.
How did he happen to get here?
Well, yeah, it, he came here before the herring came. I guess he was a fisherman because he went herring. He had his herring plant over there, but he was here several years before the before that herring came, and he made his living with moonshine. He had a still, I guess, somewhere over there. We went over there, hunted for his still one time. We never could find it. But he did sell an awful lot of rot gut. Yeah, he sold a lot of it. That's where he got his money to start the herring fishing.
I thought he knew a lot of wine.
Oh yeah, he made wine too.
What did he make the other stuff out of there?
I don't know, a lot of weeds and stuff, I think. Anything that would ferment. It was horrible stuff.
Did you taste it?
I tasted it, sure. I didn't want any more.
Did you know this Dr. Newhall?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of person was he?
Very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then he left when they closed the Jesse Lee home here.
Yeah, he went to Point Barrow. Mm-hmm. See, he didn't want to move. Well, he was the one that, or his wife, I guess, that started the place here, probably 1890 or somewhere in there. Anyhow, they were the first. His wife is buried up here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, his second wife was went to Point Barrow with him. Then he died there.
What kind of personality did he have?
Well, as far as I didn't know him too well, you know, but he seemed to be real nice. Father Hubbard, you mean?
Father, yes.
Yeah, the glacier priest?
Yes.
No, I never did. Oh, he was, I suppose so, yeah. He was kind of an explorer. You know, and, well, he made trips all over Alaska and wrote articles. And they called him the Glacier Priest. And the one time he went up to them Aghalin Pinnacles, you know, at Mount Pavlov. And he had some false pass people with him, you know, his packers and so forth. And when he got to False Pass, he, in the story he was writing, he had to have a picture of his men wading across the creek up to here, the icy stream up in the mountains there. He didn't have it, so he got his gang to put packs on their backs, and there was a creek in False Pass about that deep. Then he got them squat down in this creek, you know, with their heads sticking out and wade across it. I didn't see that, but some of the waders told me about it later on. Well, I've been on all of them, practically, outside of two or three little rocky islands that nobody wanted to go on. Yeah, I've been on all the Aleutian Islands, and I don't know which one I liked the best. Of course, the one I made my money on, that I liked that, but it still wasn't the best. Yeah, I used to like Ajak. That was right where the naval base is now. That was a great hunting spot for birds. There was this lagoon about 4 miles long, went up to a little lake. Tide would run in there. And that was full of birds year round. All kind of ducks and geese and stuff that certain, well, like these Aleutian geese or Siberian geese that are about extinct now,
yeah.
Just a few on bold here. There used to be big flocks of them come in there. But they didn't stay there, but they traveled through there.
What about swans? What about swans?
Oh yeah, there were swans there too. Yeah. In this same lagoon up in that lake was a bunch of swans that lived there year round. I used to try to get one of them to eat. You had to crawl a mile through the grass there, and here would be the swans right here. And I'd crawl through the grass, and they'd see me. I don't know how, but they'd be on the other side of the lake when I got there.
Where did you go to school at? Where did you go to school?
No, here.
What was it like in the class?
Oh, it was... there was about 100 kids in two rooms, and there was a Jesse Lee home here too. Then that produced about 75 kids.
So the kids came to the, what was it, a territorial school?
Well, it was government school.
Government school.
Yeah.
And the Jesse Lee kids came to the government school.
Oh yeah, and kids. So there was There was about 100 kids, or just about the same number of kids there is here now. And there are two rooms.
They had a Russian school down by the bishop's house.
Mm-hmm.
How did that work? I mean, who went to that and when did they go there?
Well, they went there. That thing ran up till 1918 or so. The Russian school that was supported by the Russian government. So then, when the Bolsheviks took over in 1917 or 18, whenever that was, that ceased.
Was that a full-day school, I mean, or
They had a dormitory there where that was between the bishop's house and the church was a dormitory where kids out of town, you know.
So they didn't go to the government school?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
To both of them then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is, most of them did. Mm-hmm. Of course, some of them didn't. One winter, the priest taught school in the government school. They didn't have any teachers that winter for some reason. So they got some local people to teach school. And the priest was one of them. I forget his, what the heck was his name? No, he was a good teacher, too. He was kind of real fierce, you know, if you didn't do what he said, you got a good shellacking. In that way, but he was a good teacher. That is, he knew how to teach. Yeah, most of the kids though went to the Russian school or out of town. You know, on account of dormitory, they had kids from all the villages, you know, come to that school. And I guess it was pretty good school. The Russian government supported the church. And they had plenty of money. Church had lots of money then, but after the Bolsheviks took over there, and then there was no money. So that was the end of the church.
When you had your boat, did you have to carry the bishops around to the different villages?
Hmm?
When you were running your boat,
What?
One of the Russian bishops.
Oh, yeah, I carried one time from Attica. He was seasick all the way in. It was real rough. And, of course, my boat wasn't very big, you know, 50 foot. And he was out, he made a very good collection in Attica. He had a bag full of money and a bag full of blue foxes. And he had a long beard, you know, it reached way down to here. And he laid in a bunk and threw up. And it all ran down on his beard. He had a beard, you know, big full beard like so, and it was just like a tail when he'd wring his beard out every You know, every time he threw up, he'd pull his beard and it got real tiny and stuck together. So, then when we got in the bay here, of course it was nice weather then, and he pulled a gigantic comb out of his pocket and combed his beard in cloud of dust. And his beard came out again. But he was really seasick. Goss took him out to Apka that time, and I happened to come through there, and coming in this way, and this, what's his name, Galtianov, the one they called Captain Nice?
Yes.
John, yeah. He was with him that time.
Did you ever see those three-man Batakis with, you know, besides three men, other people in them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Akatan people used to come here from Akatan with these the three hats by Darkies. Yeah, they were, I guess, about 30 feet long, I guess. They were awful long. And they'd land on the beach right in front of McGlashan House. Old man McGlashan had a store over there. Of course, he lived here. And they'd land right in front of his house. That's where Nick Lukanov's house. That old house, that was McGlashan House. And they'd dig in them by darkies and pull out kids and wives and, you know, I don't know how the thing carried that many. There'd be a big crowd of, after they got all the people out there by darkies, then they'd dig way in the ends and pull out their furs or whatever they had.
How long would that be, Henry?
Hmm?
How long would that take them
about? Gee, I don't know. They took their time. You know, they'd camp here and there. And
they traveled together, two together, or
just
one?
Oh, there used to be three or four. That's long before your time, when they used to land here.
Did you ever ride in one of those?
No, I didn't. I tried to one time in Apka, and well, they had to launch another Bidarki and go out and rescue me. I was afraid to move. You know, this thing was going to tip over, so I just sat still and waited for them to come out and rescue me. But they were using, Apka was using Bidarkis quite a bit then.
Who used them last?
Let's see, I think Apka. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were still using quite a few there in the 20s. Mm. And there were none here then.
Did you ever go into a Barabara? Were there Barabaras here? I mean, that you can remember at Alaska?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was, let's see, there used to be one just beside the church on the creek bank, and there was a row of them down where the AC. Alaska bunkhouse is now. Mm. There was four or five of them there, right on that quick bank there.
Well, where did that one come from? That they used for a steam dock down by the creek, the old footbridge. Cameron stepped in his pond down toward the creek.
You mean where that bridge was?
Yeah.
Because the Russian school had one right on the creek, you know, on the other side of the church.
Is that the one they turned into a steam bath? Is that the one they turned into a steam bath?
No, that was about the steam bath.
Oh.
It was right down close to the creek.
Oh, that wasn't a robbery.
No, no, it was a wooden building. Yeah. See, they had a bridge down there too then. You know, right behind the store, the AC store, used to be a bridge across there. And there was this one up here that was still there during World War II. The one up, that's the one you're talking about.
That rusty old pipe that still angles across the creek is from the AC company water system.
Mm-hmm. It's from the pond across the creek. See, that used to be quite deep.
The reservoir, you mean?
Yeah. That used to be, see that island that's in it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that water would cover that island mm-hmm. until the dam busted on the little dam on this side, mm-hmm. you know, where they had spillway
mm-hmm.
that went out during the war.
Oh, we told Mr. Swanson we hold him here about an hour, and it's been more than that. It's been so interesting. I sit and listen to him all night. And it has been nice having you, Henry.
Well,
we're going to talk a little bit about our historical society here. And
when did this historical society start?
We're going to have to ask Ray that. When did it start, yeah. Ray?
No, I mean it's worth to get kind of get historical things about the town or what?
Yeah, and see, the city gave us a room in the old school building
mm-hmm.
when the school moved over to this one. So that's sort of about the time I think we became active.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like we've got a lot of Alaskan books here and some documents. Oh,
well, that's you always got stuff that's from the Fairbanks.
Those pictures.
Yeah, pictures and old letters and
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, your mother, Phil, said that one time she was at a state historical meeting in Seward, and apparently there was a historical society here back, I don't know when, it was like the third one in the state. We didn't know anything about it, and she didn't either, but this guy brought up this thing and said, well, here are you back in 1910 or 1920, or I don't know when it was.
They found it. Mm-hmm.
They found something that there had been, I don't know how long it lasted mm-hmm. or what it was or if it did anything.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You never heard about that?
No. What year was it?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Early 1900s.
They never sent us anything mm-hmm. about it, you know, any records mm-hmm. or but we'd like to, we've made some tapes.
Well, yeah, that was probably some kind of a deal there, you know, when they, when that gold rush was on.
Mm-hmm. Seems to be Applegate had something to do with it, but I'm not
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it would. See, Applegate, he was a real old timer here,
mm-hmm.
from 1870 or so forth. And, he had this vessel, Everett Hayes, sailing vessel, and he went sea otter, but he had a captain. He didn't captain it himself.
He stayed here?
No, he went along.
Oh, he went along?
Oh, yeah. He was out that time when we were out, too, that last year.
Mm-hmm.
He only got nine sea otters that time.
And your boat got how many?
14.
14.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was 5 months.
You were out 5 months?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
from here to Kodiak, between here and Kodiak. That is all summer. I think we left here in April, April or somewhere in there. Out May, June, July, August. It was 4 or 5 months.
Did you ever get stuck on a Fox Island with Henry?
Yeah, I did. The time the Omnak Native got wrecked. I was on Iliga on Four Mountains. Mm-hmm. I had that island at one time. I trapped it that winter, and they were going to pick me up in February. That's when they got wrecked. See, if they didn't get wrecked, they would pick me up the next day. See, they had supplies for Nikolsky. Anyhow, they got they ran in some bad weather, and they went in this Inganuda Bay and anchored. During the night, the wind shifted around, and they tried to get out there, but they couldn't get the engine going. They drifted ashore right up against the cliffs, and they you know, it blew. I was 40 miles from there on this island, and it blew so hard that I that night that I left my cabin. You know, I was afraid it was going to blow away. And I went down the hill and got under a big rock, and the blanket wrapped around me, and some cigarettes to smoke, and that's it. And I sat there all night. Then the morning I looked, and I had a skiff. I had that skiff all weighed down with logs and stuff so it wouldn't blow away. And I had it chained to a rock. And during the night, the skiff waved around there, and all I had in the morning was a chain, a little piece of wood that long on the chain, and no more skiff. Well, that's the night they got wrecked. And they, three of them got off, three of the crew, and the rest of them were trapped inside. You know, the boat laid over, and they got ashore, though, in the morning, but they were been up their necks in water all night. It was winter cold, so they just lay down and died on the beach. Except the priest, there was a priest aboard, and there was one kid. You know, they had a lot of fur aboard that they had picked up from this end of Umnak, where the airfield is now. And they wrapped, this kid, I guess, did it, wrapped the priest up in this furs, and then he took off. And the he managed to go about 6-8 miles, I guess, and he sat down to rest, and that was it. Never got up again. They found him there. See, the three men that got off, well, one of them laid down and died, and the other two walked into the village. But it took them about 3 days to walk into the village, and another 3 days for a gang to walk out there, so it was about a week before anybody got there. And the priest, he was okay. He had frozen feet or something. He was okay. He had this kid left some stuff for him to eat too. And the boat just, the hull was completely gone. See, they were trapped in the house. He had quite a big house on deck, and the boat laid over on these rocks, and the door was down. They didn't have a door on both sides, just on one side, and they were all in there. And the boat went all to pieces. I saw the, I went in there and looked at it later on, and there was just the deck and the house left. The rest of the boat was completely gone. See, after the boat got all ground to pieces, the deck and the house went up on the beach.
How long were you on your island then before they...
Oh, I was there in a couple extra months. I used to build a fire every night, you know, and wait for, you know, in case somebody came to pick me up. And, well, anyhow, the one morning here they come around the point. I just made a pot of coffee and was going to drink it. I looked out the window, and here they were coming around the point. It was another boat. So I just threw the coffee pot out the window and threw my fur and whatever I was going to take down the bank onto the beach. And I was ready to go when they come ashore.
You didn't have to trap anymore.
I wasn't
going
to.
You didn't have to trap anymore, how did you? What did you do with your time?
Oh, that was bad, you know, when I was still trapping and expecting that boat. I had already explored the island. You know, I knew where all the caves and everything were. And so that 2 months was kind of rough, and then waiting to get picked up.
I'd like to make an announcement or two here, and then we have donuts and fudge and coffee, tea, or whatever you want in there. But you all know that we're getting ready for our big show, and it's going to be a big one this year, I'm sure. It should be a lot bigger than it was last year. And everyone seems to be so interested in it. We have some of our chairmen already going here. Ray is publicity chairman, and he wants all the help he can get. If you're good at making posters and things like that and helping him, well, that's fine. I imagine Ray liked that. And Lori here is signing up everyone for the booths. Now, she has help spread around all over, but she needs lots of help on that, because we do need to know that these people are going to leave a left, and I didn't get to her. I want her to stir up some people too, and that's a good one for you too, Harriet, to help stir up these people. But they're coming to me and wanting to sign up, and if you don't know who to go to, why call me down at Kathy's. I'm always there anyway, and we'll get you all signed up. If you do anything, we've sent out these little papers here that Lori made up, and they're sort of self-explanatory, and you can pass them around. We'll have a lot more of them to pass out to people. Barbara Hahn here is chairman for the decorating, and we don't know exactly all we're going to decorate yet, but we're going to have that. And if you have anything you want to say right now, you just don't quite know what you're going to do. And entertainment. We need someone for an entertainment chairman. I have a band signed up. Yes, a bottle band or something. This young man came in, and I heard him talking, you know, that they had formed some sort of a a bottle band, you know, they blow and they have different tones and things like that, you know. And they have an old wash tub and they're making a drum out of something, you know. Do you know them? Do you know who they are? They're over at Universal.
Oh, yeah.
And a real nice young fellow. And he says, you know, we're getting pretty good. So I signed him up right away. And if you know of anyone else, so that's great, too. But we're going to...
Oh, he's got that washed up deal?
Yes.
With a stick and one string?
Something. I don't know what they've made of. They have a lot of bottles that they probably partially fill with water, you know, so they can get different tones on. And they have the drum, and they're having a lot of fun. Phil's been doing all the work so far, almost. You know, he's just been running ragged around here. Have you found out anything about the two befores and things? Have you talked anyone out of that?
Yes, ma'am. There's some more work to be done on that, but it looks pretty good. Part of the city work crew has agreed to help.
Oh, beautiful.
And I have looked for some trouble there. I'll get together with Barbara. We were thinking about six booths, three together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is that right? And everything I've been doing has been turning out really great.
Yes, you've been doing a real good job. You really have, Phil. Phil comes around and reports every once in a while, and he's already done something more, you know. He's practiced.
No, that's because of the people that I contact.
And we will need someone to, if you know of someone that would be interested in finding these people on entertainment, we should have entertainment. We could clock that and have something going on most of the time if we're, you know, we get enough of them. This young man told me there were a couple of fellows over there were real good solo guitarists, you know. Well, that's a start, and those things.
That's at Universal Foods.
Yes. And we want people who will work on the cleanup committee. We should have a lot of them. We did last year, and they just cleaned it up in a hurry, you know, and it worked out real good. And then you're kind of taking care of that booth setup business so that we can have that. We'll get lots of people to help you because they're going to have to clean that and set that up. All right, Lori, do you have anything to add to what you've already accomplished? I give Lori a terrible job.
Well, the only thing I'm looking for is, like, right in the middle, it says, for more information, contact. And what I'd like to do is try to get some main person, like one at Panalaska and one out at Wakefield, just to sort of advertise. And if they could put their name down or say one person on the Teresa Lee that would kind of get up posters and talk to people, because it's going to be hard to get somebody to actually start making something because they feel, oh, nobody will want to buy my stuff or nobody will want to see my stuff. But if you have one person ask them, won't you please do it, they're more enthused about it and they will bring their stuff and show it or sell it. So it's mainly a talking thing, because you can have a million posters, but you got to have somebody actually say something and actually say, please, bring it, and they'll bring it. So if you know somebody on these different processors that I could give a few dittos to and have put up posters, would you let me know? Because I don't really know enough people. So if you know anybody on the different processors that might do this for me, could you please let me know? That's what I'm looking for right now.
Diane, while I'm thinking about it, be sure and give her Marilee's last name. And you have to contact her through Betty's Bundy. But she's very excited about it. Okay. Now, is there anything else that you think of right now? only you're all going to be on committees. You might just as well make up your mind to it now. And Pat is here tonight representing the student council. They're going to have a booth this year. And Pat, have you decided what you're going to have in your booth yet?
Something like a bake sale.
Something like a bake sale? And popcorn?
Yes,
all right. Like I said, look what we did last year. You know, our first year, and we didn't even know what we were doing.
Yeah. There's some pictures there of last
year. Yes, and you must all come and see these pictures here. They were taken from last year, and it's a lot of fun. It's got the county fair. Is there any questions or anything anyone has to say now?
We have to quit asking Henry questions now.
No, you don't have to quit asking Henry questions. I just got in here so I could get coffee or whatever for all of you, and you can go right on and sit here and ask Henry questions all night, and I'm going to sit where I can listen. Yes. I think we all owe Henry a vote of thanks, and this is not to stop him. This is just why we're all here.
No, I didn't tell you any history, did I?
I thought you did fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, all of this things happened now, like...
We were here, you know, I mean, way back.
No, I mean, well, not all the way back.
No, not all the way back, but...
From 1910 on, but then there's some more from 1910 other way.
True. That, there he is.
And, of course, I wouldn't know too much about that.
I was interested in the difference in the change of the fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you used to have so many cod.
I was so surprised that it's so picked up so nice. Oh, there's the PTA this week.
Oh, yeah. Salmon,
no, well, for a while after the war, there was none.
No, true. I guess
that is in this area.
I never saw
Is it all the activity up here, both the
air and
on the sea, would that sort of fight them away or scare them away? They weren't fished out, were they?
No, they weren't. Because nobody fished here during the war.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they, they just disappeared. Of course, here they blamed it on pollution, which there was. This creek was polluted, so they had all kinds of stuff up there. But then it happened in Cushion and all the other places where there was no pollution.
That's interesting, isn't it?
This one was really polluted. They had laundry up there that with their discharge water running into the creek and down the lake.
And their sewers, I suppose.
Dry cleaning places where their dry cleaning fluid was dumped in there.
All these items, with all the money they brought in here in Westwood, we think they could have taken care of that.
Yeah. Well, they had a sewage system up there, but then a lot of these places, they didn't bother with running it in the sewer. They just...
just any place. Just all
over
here.
The bank,
sure.
Into the creek. A dry cleaning thing there they have was, it was a big laundry and dry cleaner. Up close to where the theater, where they had the theater. And it was right on the bank of that creek. And they had a big 6-inch pipe running from it where all their soap and wash water and that dry cleaning stuff went right into the creek and down the creek and here was this creek in town, going to the town there, used to be clean. Now it's all full of this growth, you know, that well, slippery. It was right, nice clean gravel, and that was from pollution.
It
was growing down toward the mouth of the creek. That stuff is that long, you know, when it's standing up from the bottom.
That's too bad, and it never comes back. Would you like some tea or...
French.
No, sir.
It says French on there. Did you say anything? I guess it did. After she said that, that's what it looks like a candy bar, or donut.
Well, I'm like,
You didn't get to go there, kind of.
Cass, you wanna go over there?
I had to go, I'm just tired. I love gas tank, water.
How are you? Your daughter tell you?
Well, my daughter didn't know that, but I don't know how to interpret it. She said, Bill said to tell you that, yes, he's all doing it, and you know what he means.
Well, I showed it to him. I showed it to him, I said, you see this? Yes. I told your mother, you saw it. You didn't know what it was.
Well, she came home with the message, she said, I saw, he said, how do you know what you know? That's all what she said. So let's see what she saw.
No, it's over in my room. We can go over there, but...
Well, I'd be proud of this for me if I went over there.
Yes, but she's she's
Dave to escort her. I know, she got the whole thing.
I think Dad would want to come over.
Sure. I could have a party if you can get them all over there.
Did you want me to take it?
It's just in the office.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no. You're the only one I love, Jill.
Would there be fox on the island when you rented it?
No,
or I mean when you leased it?
No.
Or
no, most of these islands were bare.
So you'd have to start it all out.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing, you know, because the blue foxes and reds don't mix.
That's what I've heard. The reds will drive the blue off,
or they'll kill them or something. Yeah. Yeah, we tried it, we put blue foxes on islands where there was reds, and next year there was lots of reds and no blue foxes.
Was there a black fox?
But the blue?
No, a black one, a black fox.
Oh, yeah.
Because in some of the early records, like in the Russian days where they list the fox, they list the black fox.
Well, black fox and silver and red are all the same fox.
Hmm.
They're just the color.
Hmm.
And the blue fox is a white fox.
Okay.
That is, you know, it's your...
Like an Arctic fox, or...
Mm-hmm.
That's what she said.
And the way they do it, they... they catch... like the silvers. They did catch a pair of silvers and breed them and maybe get a litter of reds. That's what happened to the Crom brothers. That was the biggest silver fox ranchers in the world in Minnesota, I think. I think they started in the 1890s, and these two young, these boys, they were going to raise silvers, so they caught a couple of silvers, put them in the pen and bred them, and they got a whole litter of red foxes. they're like on the Blue Fox Island, like some islands, like one island I had. I had throwbacks to red and white. Let's see, out of 140 colors, I had 27 whites. They were throwbacks to the white, which was okay, except they were bum whites. They were kind of yellow, you know. They weren't really white.
Was there very much rivalry between people who lived on Dutch Harbor and people who lived on Unalaska? I mean,
no.
Okay.
You mean in the old days?
Yeah. Yeah.
How are you? I'm sure sorry you didn't know
about that. Well, Dutch Harbor was.
Could have come down anyway. I was scared that
the only reason for the charbroil was that
the girls came and there was
northern commercial. Was there a northern?
No, it was North American commercial.
North American commercial.
Yeah.
Little black cat.
And they were interested in whaling ships.
Mm.
It went up in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the whalers were, you know, going up the Arctic, and there were lots of them. And all they took was that baleen. See, there was a whale up there. See, I think it was the right whale that had awful long bone in their mouth, 12, 14 feet long. Where these other whales, you know, they had small, you know, about 4 feet. These were that wide.
Let's see. Where are we?
And then they, or they were used it to make buggy whips and corsets, you know, whalebone and corsets.
This Dr. Fortine, he's the head of the ANS hospital. Mm-hmm. He's writing a paper on health and the Aleutians, and he said that the whalers were especially rough. Mm-hmm. Men on whaling ships were especially rough people, and that as long as they kept coming into Unalaska, the health would be worse, you know, and there'd be more problems in town. And once the whalers left, then things got better.
We're going to get her to work. That's just what I was going to ask you. What the health conditions were like when you were growing up here?
Bad.
General health was pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a doctor in here,
ever? Well, yeah, there was he was a pretty good doctor. And then they had Coast Guard doctor here, too. So we had doctors here 9 months out of the year.
Was there a kind of epidemic about 1909 or 1910? I noticed a lot of children's graves.
Last year
like there's a whole row of children's graves up in the cemetery that are all in the same period, and I was wondering if there was some kind of.
Oh, you mean or way up the other end?
Pretty far, you know where the main group is, and it's probably one of the highest ones, kind of up.
Yeah.
But most of them say like 1909, 1910. It might have been the 1910. There was a maybe they were a couple years spread, but they were all kind of in one group.
But then, yeah, they had I think smallpox epidemic here in around 1900. And then, of course, during the flu, 1918.
Yeah, well, I had flu, and people died.
Well, that was the real flu. That was the World War I.
It went all around the world, I think. That,
It went around the world. But you know, without places where nobody went, the people got it. You know, traveled through the air or something.
When did the public health nurses start to lay off?
They were in the 30s. After the war. No, I don't think.
No, they had the hygiene. That's all the travel. That was after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Why did that happen?
territorial, I think.
Yeah.
June.
Well, there was the hygiene, and there was two of them.
Two of them.
There was the hygiene was ex army boat, and the other one was one of these big power barges that went up the river to Yukon and so forth. And the hygiene, well, they had doctor and nurse and so forth.
Where's Marty? I just saw Marty.
And they took x-rays. But then in the early 1900s, they...
I'm on cleaner.
You're already on cleaner?
Yeah.
I lived from 1900 to 1910, when I left here in 1910, and I come back here in 1920, or latter part 1919, that's when I was in Navy. TB was bad up here.
Maybe lay it out a little bit, and not necessarily.
So what, the people died right and left from it.
How did they treat
it? You will help set it up though, Marty, huh?
They didn't treat it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They didn't have it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, there was funerals quite often.
Victoria will help too.
What was Mount Newhall called before it became Mount Newhall?
I don't think it had any name.
No name. Okay, I wondered. I've never seen it on any maps, old maps or something.
And they claim Mount Ballyhoo was named by
Jack London?
Jack London.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about him ever being here?
Well, he passed through here. All them people passed through here going to Nome.
Where's the fire tree?
Someone, I think Walter Diakonoff mentioned, there's a fireplace over in the officers' building on Dutch that Jack London was supposed to build, and then they took it out of a cabin he built and reassembled it, but I don't know.
If you know of anyone who plays an instrument,
I don't think there was any fireplace in Dutch Harbor, but Dutch Harbor was a nice village.
Mm.
A nice big house, like a castle.
Mm.
A big hotel, L-shaped hotel, a lot of cottages, and two big warehouses, and coal yards, and that dock, the same dock that's there now, except it's been rebuilt. But they had that same dock, just the way it is now, same size. And that was the North American
right.
Grandfather worked for
it. Well, what I had was...
Well, you got that paper, you know, that mentioned my grandfather.
Okay, okay.
How he worked for the AC company. 1876.
Rankin?
Yeah, 1876.
Yeah.
He got fired.
Right, okay.
Didn't say why, except he'd done something wrong, anyway, whatever it was. So he went to work for the North American. That's when it mentioned when he went to Chernovsky.
Yeah, I'll find you. Don't worry.
200 or 300 sea otter skins they had there.
Well, what was the sea otter skin worth then?
Well, I don't know. They wasn't. I see an old records where the hunters got $20.
Well, I heard
that they were worth several hundred dollars. You know, 1910, when we went to sea otter hunting, when they got 14, they were almost extinct.
Yeah.
And, but there was still a demand for them. The price was over $2,000 for one.
Sure.
Up to the hunter,
to the
Canadian. No one bought it.
Yeah.
It's not bad. That's a big markup.
Mm-hmm. No, when we hunted there in 1910, the hunters got $300. The fur sold in London was for $200. There was a demand for them,
but and there were still a few on the market. But there was a big demand for it. And there was not enough building demand, so the
price went way up. 99.
We better get on the market with
this.
What?
And during the 20s, when it was illegal, I sold one. I got $500 for it.
Yes. What time do you have,
that is 17 to 10, I think it's 500. But that same one in 1910 was over 2,000. It's a nice one.
Is that his formal name?
What do you have? Do you have a ranch out here?
Oh, no.
No, I'm
not. No, everybody quit there. When the price went way down, of course, they had war on too. Well, nobody ever started up again. Well, the price stayed
up
until now.
It's pretty good now.
Yeah, all the during the war, all long hair grew went down to nothing for some reason.
It's style. Women's styles, women's fashions change, you know.
Yeah.
The boxes are coming back pretty good now. I think you get $40, $50, $60.
Yeah.
For the red box.
Yeah, for red. But the only box that did not go all the way down was the Arctic White. But it did go down.
Oh, yeah.
But then, when the restroom was worth nothing, even the silver, you know, with the expensive box, they went down to nothing, too.
Where's your
stepfather had a big box ranch in Texas. And he had to quit and go to Maine.
Switch to Maine.
Was there ever any bears on the island?
No. Unimak Island is there.
Far away as they go.
Yeah. That's the first island. The only reason they're on there was, well, the false pass is narrow.
These features are just gorgeous.
And they probably swam up
there. That's a new picture, huh?
Caribou.
Hey, that's good.
A lot of caribou that swam back and forth across the patch there.
Caribou would be nice.
Caribou would be nice, yeah.
Well, here's Ruthie and her citizen.
I'm ready to go home, are you?
But I did ask about Kodiak, living on Kodiak.
Bears?
I always worry about bears on the bush or somewhere.
Yeah, well, Cold Bay was a bad place for bears.
Yeah.
And still is, I think.
We lived up in Naknek, too. That's a bad
place. I mean, them coming into the house.
Yeah,
they're in Cold Bay. Especially in spring when they first come out, they were hungry.
Come out into garbage cans in the town, get people garbage.
Yeah.
That's when they're dangerous.
And if you leave your door open, they would
right in the house.
Come in the house. Well, one guy there, the bear did. It was a big one, too. The bear came in the front door.
Now I'm certainly glad
that family all run into the back room. And he got, he went out the window in the back room. He didn't have any gun. He went to the neighboring bar, the gun, and came around and killed the bear in his living room.
Oh, dear.
He made a big mess.
I bet. Hard job getting him out of it, too.
Then they had the mess hall there. I think Northwest Airlines ran the mess hall. So there was a lot of work going there. And they had the garbage can doors. Especially this one big bear, come there and raise the garbage can. Well, that was okay, except you dumped them on the ground. And they
had to gather up the garbage. So one night they were going to cool that bear, so they left to put the garbage cans inside. The bear just tore the doors off the hinges and went in. Then after the bear got in, he smelled something nice further on. So he didn't bother the garbage. He went in there and ate the whole hind quarter of them. They were thawing out. See, they were feeding a couple hundred men there at the time. So they had this whole hind quarter of beef.
The heck of the garbage can, and you got hind quarter of beef.
Yeah, well, there was everything wide open. There was that hind quarter of beef laying. And the bear got after it. That cost him his life. They shot him the next time he came up.
No blame. I'm just mad.
Did you?
Ben's going to give you a ride down. I'm not sure where Marie went, and I called up. Well, they may be stuck somewhere in between.
It's quit raining, I guess, huh? It's in your back, isn't it?
In your back, yeah.
That's your work.
Oh, I can help you out,
sure.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what kind of recording we got.
Henry, whenever you're ready.